ESPN 107.3 presents Wild at Heart, bringing outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, powered by Cowtown USA, Cold Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, Trout and Sons, and Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. Now, Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM in the pulse of the Ozarks, beautiful Rolla, Missouri. I'm your host, Tommy Bench, with co-host Jerry Cook, John Francis, our radio engineers here as well. Welcome to Wild at Heart. We are red-blooded Americans who remember and cherish our outdoor heritage. We love America and support the Second Amendment. We stand for our national anthem, say please and thank you, and open doors for the ladies. We hunt, fish, trap, shoot, float, camp, and explore in God's country, the Missouri Ozarks, right out your back door, and occasionally a few points beyond. Join us each week, Wednesday at 4 p.m. here on ESPN 107.3, or catch us Sundays at 8 a.m. or anytime online at ESPN1073.com. This segment of Wild at Heart is brought to you by J. Cook Fly Rods, custom fly rods plus everything you need for fly fishing, located in downtown Salem. Could you use a little extra cash this holiday season? Here at Wild at Heart, we're giving away a $100 Amazon gift card. No strings attached. All you have to do is go to ESPN1073.com and enter. Do it now while you're thinking about it. We're going to start the show off by talking to Mike Unruh with Fallen Outdoors. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, Tommy. Thanks for having me out today.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. It's more than a pleasure to have you out. So tell us, you know, with the Fallen Outdoors, I know there's different branches. Kind of give us a little history background on how the Fallen Outdoors was created.
Sure. Well, first off, the Fallen Outdoors, we're a 501c3, which is a non-for-profit. We're a veteran-based hunting and fishing organization. We do much more than hunting and fishing, but that's our main focus. Our goal is to get veterans outdoors free of charge to them. We do everything. Anything you can think of to get veterans outdoors. To prevent that, you know, the 22 days or the 22 veterans we hear commit suicide every day.
Right.
That's what we try to prevent by getting our veterans in the outdoors.
Doing something that you know, that's enjoyable, relaxing, and they can, you know, associate with their peers, you know, and hang out and do stuff that, you know, that they enjoy to do. It's a great thing to do, and it's definitely great for our veterans in general. I mean, I think it's an amazing group you guys got going on. So when was the Fallen Outdoors originated? Do you know that?
Yeah, so, of course, in 2009, we were formed basically in Washington State by our founder, Eric Bakken. Previously to that, him and a couple of his guys that, you know, wanted to create this outdoor organization for specifically the veterans were deployed, and Eric was one of the three that came home, the other two did not. And so when he came home, he's like, yeah, this is going to fruition. I'm creating this organization. And, you know, such then the Fallen Outdoors evolved, and it's grown from just a Washington State-style team where we covered the nation through one state. We've built chapters. We have teams in almost every state now. And our outreach is well over 50,000 veterans strong, members of our pages and stuff like that. So it's pretty neat.
That's amazing. I'm glad to hear that, and it's great to hear someone doing something so great for the, you know, for the veterans, and some way to prevent, you know, bad things from you know, their thoughts and processing, or just give them a positive environment. And so what around here, what is the chapter? Is it the Midwest chapter? Is that what it's called, or am I saying that wrong?
No, I mean, you're correct. So I'm the Midwest Regional Director. The Midwest covers pretty much the 12 states in the Midwest, but more specifically here in Missouri is the Fallen Outdoors Team Missouri, and we operate in and around the state of Missouri. We do fluctuate state to state based on the needs of the other states around us that need some help. But we have a strong team here. We have 26 pro staff on team. And when I say pro staff, they're not paid. It's all volunteer basis. And what they do is they give up all their free time to helping getting veterans in the outdoors.
Yeah.
And doing outdoor-related activities.
That was my next question. You know, what does a pro staff entail? You know, whenever you become pro staff status for Fallen Outdoors in this chapter, what are your obligations as far as what you need to do, or what, you know, what's asked of you to do? And I know it's voluntarily. These guys are doing it on their own time, own money, and that's amazing. You know, it's good that they're doing that. But what is, you know, something that that they do as a pro staffer.
So as a pro staffer, you're pretty much in charge of, you know, your area of responsibility. If you live out in the middle of nowhere, don't have anybody else around you, well, you're out there in charge of, you know, spreading the good word of the Fallen Outdoors and what we do, helping raise funds to give back to the veterans. And like I said, we are a 501c3, so all funds that we receive or raise go right back into getting those veterans on those free cool trips. And so they volunteer their time, update the pages on our Facebook pages, and outreach, you know, find veterans in needs. If somebody's house burnt down, they lost all their hunting clothes, or they lost a, you know, a pet or something like that. We research those things and try to get stuff donated to the organization to give out to those veterans so they don't have to worry about it.
What is your Facebook page?
So we have many regional pages. More specifically here, again, it's you can go to Facebook, type in the Fallen Outdoors Midwest All Veterans Community page, and you'll find us here, the Missouri team, in that chapter there. If you can hear us from, you know, other parts of the United States, so you can also go to the Fallen Outdoors East Coast, West Coast, or Southern page and find the states that fall within those regions as well.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, that's an amazing thing. You know, what is the main thing you guys you talked about hunting and fishing. Is that two of the main things that you focus on as far as the activities you guys do? Anything, you know, I mean, is there anyone that just wants to go hiking or canoeing? I mean, obviously I don't know how you could go canoeing without fishing, but people do it. That's the truth, folks. People really do go canoeing without bringing a fishing pole. That is a fact. I know it's hard to believe, but it's true.
And replace that fishing pole with a case of beer or something. Just do a nice scenic float down the Missouri flyways.
Right.
Yeah. No, I understand.
Yeah.
That.
So
we do it all. And when I say all, I mean, we literally do it all. We have veterans that are interested in hunting and fishing. They want to go on nature walks, nature hikes. They want to go mushroom hunting. We got a gentleman that we work with often, falconry, hunts with falcons. That's an amazing type of thing. We have a local guy here that traps chipmunks.
Really?
And he tans their hides and makes these little chipmunk rug, and that's pretty sweet.
Hey, you know, this is getting pretty cool. It's getting pretty interesting right here.
We'll be here all night. We can talk about whatever.
So falcon, what is the falconry you was talking about?
So it's pretty much this trained falcon to go catch small game. So he'll have it on his arm. He'll release it out. It goes out and scans the area, finds a rabbit, swoops down, grabs a rabbit, and brings it right back to the dude.
Really?
It is awesome.
And he trained the falcon himself?
That's correct, yep.
Huh. What kind of license do you have to get a falcon? Because that's awesome. I want a falcon now.
It's pretty sweet. I think it's just a falconry license is what they call it, I believe. And it's just, I mean, obviously there's some risk involved, you know, but the falcons are decently small comparable to, you know, other big birds. But it's a pretty cool thing they do. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
You said there's some risk involved. What risk?
I mean, it's got talons, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There could be some.
And they've got a mind of their own as well. You know, just like a dog or anything else, they're trained. But you know what? They're still an animal.
So I'm a former military police canine handler, and, you know, that dog will do dog things every once in a while. And, you know, when it gets a good bite, sometimes it don't want to let go. And I'm sure the falcons want to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Chase, catch, and carry. That's the animal's instinct right there.
That's right. That's awesome, though. I think that's pretty cool right there, having a falcon.
Yeah. Pretty sweet.
Well, let me ask you another question, Mike. Do you put any limits as far as number of times veterans can take advantage of your services?
You know, most of our trips are all posted on Facebook. For instance, I have a trip I do every year coming up in the middle of December. I take 20 veterans with me to Western Kansas. I'm from Kansas, so I take people back home. We do a 3-day upland bird hunt. We slay some pheasants and quail. And it's 20 veterans. And I'll post on our Facebook, I can take 20 veterans, and I'll go to random.org and put their names in, and I'll randomly select 20 veterans. And if somebody goes 2 times, 3 times, it's all random basis. You know, we're not choosing favorites. Most of these guys I don't know, never seen before.
Yeah.
And just because I posted on the Midwest page doesn't mean that, you know, people from the other regions can't come too. It's open to anybody. As long as they can get here, they're going on that trip. It's pretty cool. Raise funds in order to pay for the hotel costs, and we have... In this specific event, we have close to 50,000 acres of private land that my cousins own and have access to, and we go out there and we shoot some birds.
That's pretty cool right there.
Awesome.
You know, if you're a veteran out there and you're listening to this right now, you need to get a hold of Fallen Outdoors and at least follow them. And if there's something you're wanting to do, there you go. I mean, this is an amazing, amazing organization, and you got to take advantage of it by just – being with your brotherhood, you know, so to speak. So
yeah, and there's no cost involved.
Nothing.
In order to be a member of our page, you click on the button that says join the group, and it asks you three simple questions. Are you a veteran? And we go by the truth and honest system. Mm-hmm. And it says, you know, what was your times of service, branch of service, dates of service, and stuff like that. And if you answer those questions correctly, you're in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's our goal, is to create this huge network of outdoorsmen that are like-minded outdoors women. From all around the nation. And if you have issues with leadership, VA stuff, you know, that's the stuff we kind of talk about on our group chats and get to know people and get this comfortable outdoorsy environment established and get veterans outdoors. And that's just what we love to do.
And Mike, let me ask you this, if I may. Is this involve strictly combat veterans or all veterans?
All veterans, exclamation mark. It doesn't matter if you're a disabled veteran or served, you know, and got medically retired out of basic training. As long as you served honorably or currently serving, you're welcome to be a member of our organization.
Okay. That's a good explanation. I was going to ask that next. That way people would understand. They wouldn't be afraid to ask to join just because they wasn't, you know, a combat veteran or whatnot. So,
and we do tons of stuff also for Gold Star families.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. The youth. I have a young child. I have actually an 11-year-old son, a 5, 2, and 1-year-old daughters. And our youth, and you guys can acknowledge that our youth are the ones that's going to replace us, you
that's
know, on
it.
The water, in the woods,
yep.
eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring those youth out. Youth seasons are awesome around here. Tons of youth. Fathers reach out to us like, hey, I got to work this day. I can't get my son out. Man, we'll be your father for the day and help him out.
Yeah.
If not, do father-son, father-daughter, mother-son, mother-daughter hunts, fishing trips all the time. Get them youth outdoors involved. That's a good
Yeah, focus. That was the next question I was going to ask you about, you know, was the children and whatnot. But, you know, speaking of next question, we ran out of time on this segment, but we're not done with Mike Unruh from the Fallen Outdoors. Coming up in segment two, we'll talk more with Mike, and let's see, hear more about the Fallen Outdoors and what a great organization it is. I'm Tommy Benson. This is Wild at Heart. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment is brought to you by Cowtown USA, home of Can-Am ATVs and UTVs, located in Cuba, Missouri. Wild at Heart is giving away a $100 Amazon gift card. This could be yours. All you have to do is go to ESPN1073.com and enter. No strings attached. All you got to do is give them your name, phone number, and zip code, I believe. It's pretty simple, and you could be yours right now. We're talking with Mike Unruh. Thanks for staying with us, Mike.
Of course, Tommy, anytime.
Well, we was just talking about kids taking the youth, you know, with Fallen Outdoors, and I'm assuming that's, you know, a veteran's child. Or, I mean, how extensive can you go with that? Because I'm sure there may be, and I'm sure it's probably a case-by-case basis, and I'll give you a scenario. You've got a veteran that may not have any children, but he's got a nephew that's like his son, you know, or, you know, that's all he's got as far as, I mean, would that be something that, and I'm not trying to just keep on pushing the envelope here and say, well, how far can we go with just taking people on these events, but.
Or something else there, Tommy. I mean, what about for a veteran who didn't make it home and he has kids? Can those kids go with you?
Oh, by all means. Gold Star families is the one thing we were talking about in the previous segment.
Maybe you ought to say what Gold Star families are for someone who doesn't know.
Yeah, Gold Star family is a service member who forward deployed, didn't make it home, but still has that family he's got to take care of back home. And we step in and we help out by all means. Even if the spouse, whether it be male or female, doesn't like to hunt or fish, man, we'd love getting those veterans and the kids involved.
Yeah.
And as Tommy was saying, like a nephew of a veteran, I'm impartial. When it comes to kids, man, they're a free game.
Yeah.
I'll take any kid. My pheasant and quail trip I did last year out to Western Kansas, had a couple veterans back out and had slots. We work great with the Buffalo fishing team out of Buffalo, Missouri, and there's a 10-year-old that I kind of hold dear to me. Him and his dad, I said, hey, why don't you guys come on this trip? Not veterans. And they came on my pheasant and quail trip and had a blast.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. Seeing that young kid smile like he did, game on.
Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned Gold Star families. I've done some events involving Gold Star mothers. Man, the respect afforded those women, it's just amazing, and rightfully so.
Yes, correct. Definitely. definitely time-earned. And it's you know, we talk about veterans and we do all this stuff for the veterans, but we can't do it alone. You know, if it not for the landowners that aren't veterans, the people donating to us that aren't veterans, we wouldn't be the organization we could
right.
we could be. So we graciously rely on the civilian counterparts who are willing to give back to the veterans. And that's kind of what we do is our outreach. I'll go knock on a guy's door and be like, hey, this is your opportunity to give back to the veterans of this community. You know, I know you have X amount of acreage. I'm not trying to abuse it. But, man, if I could squeeze a veteran on here for a turkey hunt, a deer hunt, a predator hunt, I'm a huge predator hunter.
Yeah, and I was going to bring that up, too. Oh, yeah. I know you are that.
Oh, yeah.
I'll talk to you. We'll talk about some predators, though, because I've seen a predator out. We'll talk about that, but I'm pretty excited about it when he's out there.
I've seen hunting. Some of your pictures of some stuff on the side of the rocks, and then, yeah, we're game on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, whoa. When I first seen it, I'll tell you, this cat was so big, I thought it was a deer.
Yeah.
Man. I'll leave it at that. Continue on.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it wasn't for the gracefulness and the graciousness of our landowners that aren't veterans wanting to give back to the veterans, man, we wouldn't be the organization we are.
Right.
We have tons of landowners that aren't veterans that want to give back, and that's what we do. Is if you're a landowner or have a boat, a simple boat, John boat, flat boat with a trolling motor, and you want to say, hey, I'd love to get a veteran fishing, reach out to us.
Yeah.
We'll get you a veteran, and we'll get him in your boat and, you know, learn about that veteran because they're not going to be around all the time.
Exactly. So. Yeah, you know, just give them a good day on the water. If nothing else, like me as a guy, you know, that'd be something I could definitely fit in, you know, and try to take a veteran once a month or something, you know, just to try to, and, you know, keep that in mind. I'll hold my word to it.
Yep.
But, you know, take them guys out to, like, Daniel Barnes. I was talking to him. I've known Daniel for several years, and I've been trying to get him to go out there. And it's not – he's wanting to go, trust me, but I'm pretty busy with everything else. But I just need to make the time to do it because them veterans are – pretty important people, and they sacrifice a lot for us.
And, you know, one thing I'd like to comment on, and Damon, my guest sitting over here, will confirm this, is that every veteran has an interesting story. Every veteran has walked a path that no one really understands but another veteran.
Yes, amen.
Yeah.
And that's the good thing about our organizations. We don't cater just to disabled veterans like a lot of those organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you haven't deployed and haven't seen stuff, you're a veteran. You've seen stuff that
nobody
will
understand.
Stuff.
Right.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
So, everybody's got their demons, and let's get outdoors and get rid of them demons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
There's nothing better.
Do you get a lot of guys or ladies that will go through your program and say, I want to be a leader now?
Oh, we do, yeah. Or we'll take somebody on a trip, and they'll be like, you know what? This organization is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Let me know how I can give back. I own a guy down in Springfield owns a custom AR shop. Said, you know what? I'm going to build you something that's going to be bad. And he stuck to his word. He built us a sweet-looking 6.5 Grendel, and I actually got to go down there and pick it up here soon. But that's, I mean,
what is
awesome.
What did he build it for? Did he build it to give away? To
build it off to raffle. So, I mean,
awesome.
Obviously, a lot of our pro staff provide their own funding for our trips. And
right.
we do a lot of fundraising to get trips paid for. And in order to minimize those costs, sometimes it comes out of our pocket.
Yeah, and if you can raise money by people donating things like that AR,
yep.
that's ARs will go for a pretty penny. There's a lot of people that would love to have
back
that
during
gun.
The election time frame, ARs are going pretty
oh,
good.
Oh, yeah. Not only ARs, but ammo.
Yeah, yep.
Bump stocks, everything.
Yep.
Anything. That's pretty cool that he did that, donated that AR. Speaking of AR, that's what my kid shot her first deer with this weekend. It was a 6.8 millimeter.
Awesome.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know what a 6.8 is, but anyway, it's like, why'd you go with the 6.8? Because I wanted to. Everyone's got a 2.23.
So. Exactly. It's got knocked down. And 6.5s and, you know, 6 points whatever is that's a new rave nowadays.
Yeah,
everybody
it is.
Wants that 6.5 Creedmoor and whatnot.
Yep.
Awesome flat shooting gun, especially for here in our brush. You know,
yeah.
you're getting 200-yard shot. That's an awesome rifle round for that.
Yeah.
Type of round.
Well, let's talk about your predator hunting a little bit. I know you're big on the predators, and do you trap at all, or are you just big on hunting the predators themselves?
You know, trapping's fun and all, but, you know, I'm a bolt action kind of guy.
Yeah.
You put down a coyote or a good fox or something like
yeah.
that and rack that round. It's exhilarating. It's
yeah.
awesome. Yeah.
So what are some of your favorite tactics to draw them coyotes in? I know we're changing gears from the Fallen Outdoors, and we're going to go back to that too. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about everything. You know?
Yeah, so I follow a guy that I've kind of gotten to know pretty well here in the last 3 years. From Missouri, a Missouri guy. Heath Baker runs Alpha Dog Down.
Mm-hmm.
I watch all of his videos. He's brought me out to his place a couple times, and this dude is like a coyote slayer. He can just go out and say, hey, coyote, and the coyotes are coming to him.
He's that good.
Yeah, for real.
Come here, yote.
But, man, just, you know, sitting out over an open field, coyotes are smart. You know, they're creatures of the night, creatures of the dark.
Yep.
Treat them like a deer. Use the wind to your advantage. Get out there and just do some simple hand calling on an open read call or using your, you know, your electronic game call and getting them in your lap, you know, 20-plus yards and hitting them with a shotgun even.
Yeah.
It's just like turkey hunting. You get them drumming right in front of you. That's the same thing. Get coyotes barking at you. And it's awesome.
Wow. Have you ever shot one with a bow?
I have not yet.
That would be something, wouldn't it?
That is fun, though. I've had a couple come within range when I was out archery hunting, but I never got presented a clean, ethical shot on them, so I kind of let them.
And that's something that I'm with you on that. I'm definitely big on clean, ethical shots. I know there's we joke around talking about the Orange Army out there this weekend, and, you know, this last weekend, and then again this weekend. But anyway, there's a lot of experienced hunters and a lot of inexperienced hunters. There's some guys that it's funny because you'll see these pictures of these people writing cow on the side of their cow so they don't get shot, you know.
Yeah.
Golly. But
we all do start somewhere, though.
Yeah, we all do start somewhere. But there's a lot of people that may not even – I think a lot of them aren't even from around here. They may just come here to hunt. But either way, it's funny because I've always been one of them where I'd get home, my kids say, did you see anything? Yeah. Why didn't you shoot it? I just didn't have a good shot. You know, it was just wasn't a good shot. It was quartered away. It was a little bit brushing away. Yeah. I can't help it. That's just the way I am. I cannot take a shot unless I feel I'm 100% on it. Good shot, ethical. You know, I don't like taking shots on deer on the run or anything like that. But
One shot.
And then once I shoot it and it runs, I don't chamber another one and shoot again on the run. Right. It's either going to go down somewhere and I'll track it, blood trail, and find it.
If it's a clean shot, it's going to go down.
That's hunting.
That's hunting.
You know,
that's
hunting.
That's what it is.
It's part of the chase, yeah.
So what are some other things you enjoy to do? Let's get to know Mike Under a little bit. I know you love to predator hunt.
Long walks on the beach.
Long walks on the beach.
Osage Beach.
Singles.com. Yeah. is this farmers only?
TFOonly.com. They'll start that conversation, but... I'm an avid kayak fisherman.
Yeah.
Missouri's got some world-class smallmouth and nothing. And we got Mr. Cook sitting right next to us. Nothing like catching a smallmouth on a long rod. The smallmouth fishing out here, like I said, is amazing. Doing it from a kayak's even more gooder, as they say here in Missouri.
Yeah.
Huge kayak fisherman, like I said. I'm deep into my kayak. Don't run a bass boat. I try to get in as many tournaments as I can. Again, you know, 5, 2, and 1-year-old girls at home.
Yeah.
Mama needs her time off, too. So.
What are they again? 5, 2, and 1?
5, 2, and 1.
Mm. Woo. Yeah, you got your hands full.
Yeah.
So does Mama.
Yeah. Yes, she does.
I know all about girls. That's all I've got, too. All girls.
Yeah.
God blessed us, didn't they? Didn't he?
That's what they say.
Yeah.
Until teens roll around.
Yeah, I've got one that just turned 15 Monday.
Lord. Yeah.
So,
Mike, how does somebody get involved in the Fallen program?
So, the Fallen Outdoors, like I said, follow us on Facebook. That's the easiest way to get a hold of us. If you guys will let me, I'll throw out my email address. And if people have questions, by all means, it's just Mike, M-I-K-E, .UNRUH, @thefallenoutdoors.com. Shoot me an email. Regardless of where you're at, I'll get you in touch with the local team near you and get you going. We do have a lot of older gentlemen that don't have Facebook. A lot of people don't do the social media thing. And, you know, I hold those guys on a side separate sheet that I know that don't do stuff. When I find something in their wheelhouse, I say, hey, we got a trip coming up. It's in your wheelhouse. Would you like to get involved? Yeah, I'll throw your name in the hat. You know, I'll enter them for the drawing and stuff like that. And if they get drawn, I'll call them, notify them, stuff like that. So we work with anything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe we can talk to you a little bit more.
I'm here.
Now, can you handle vets in a wheelchair?
We do have a lot of wheelchair accessible areas that we hunt, whether it be personally built ground blinds. We do, like Tommy was talking about, Dan Barnes a little bit ago, double amputee. And if we're out of time, we can talk about that here in a little bit too. But
no, we're good. We'll talk. How about let's just have him on for another segment? I like to talk to him more. He's full of information, and I think it's good information, and it's good to get out there with Veterans Day. I can't get enough of it. So let's just have Mike back on this next segment, and we'll be right back, folks. You're listening to Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench, and we'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. Remember, you can always listen to Wild at Heart anytime you want at our website, ESPN1073.com. Just click Programming and Wild at Heart. I don't know if you guys have heard it or not, but we're giving away a $100 Amazon gift card. I've been telling everyone I can possibly think of about it, and you guys need to sign up now. All you have to do is go to ESPN1073.com to enter. It's very simple. There's no strings attached, people. All you need is your name, phone number, and zip code. Easy as that. You're entered for a $100 gift card. Get in it now. All right, so now we're back with Mike Unruh, and still we're talking with about the Fallen Outdoors and just the outdoors in general, you know, just the passion we all love and what God's given us out here. So what we were talking about, Mike, if I remember right, was taking people hunting or fishing, you know, like we was talking about Daniel and or just individuals that may be a little bit harder to accommodate, you know, like a double amputee. You know, what are some things that you do or that you can do for that? Because I know Dan, trust me, I know Daniel, I know him personally, and he's not afraid to get out there. He'll get out there on his kayak or whatever it is, and of course he's smart, he wears a life jacket, you know, but there's ways to do it. So
Dan's a unique character.
Yeah, he is.
Obviously he's injured in an IED blast, lost both his legs. And if he was sitting behind his table talking to us, you would never know he's an amputee.
No. John, do you remember me talking about when we was talking about the giveaway in the other room? And I said, I know a perfect guy that I need to nominate for that. That's Dan Barnes. That's the one I think. He's an amazing individual. And like you said, he's got a sense of humor. He doesn't let it bring him down. He'll joke about it more than anyone will, about his new socks that he got or whatever it is. And he's a heck of a guy. So if you're listening to this, Dan, we just want you to know we love you. So
oh, yeah, of course.
Yep.
Dan's the president of the Purple Heart chapter there in Fort Leonard Wood area. Every Christmas, he used to be a pro staff with us, so he just has too much going on, and we understand that.
Yeah.
But every Christmas, you know what he asked for? Duck waders. We're like, we don't know what shoe size you are, man. We can't buy you duck waders. But that's Dan Barnes. Dan Barnes, yeah. Awesome character, awesome family.
Yeah.
And his kids are great too. So
yeah. I don't know a lot about his kids. I know him and his wife, him in particular. But yeah, great, great veteran. And so yeah, we was talking about getting the veterans out. And, you know, we mentioned smallmouth. You was talking about a long pole. Was you talking about a fly rod in particular? See, that's the one suit that I'm not super strong at. So all you fly rod guys, Damon over there, and, of course, Jerry. I'm learning, though. You know, I'm learning. I've taken several clients. I take a handful every year. And I wing it, you know, and I just tell them what has worked in the past. You know, white streamers work good.
Yep.
I just learned what an articulated streamer was since I started hosting this show. So, you know, I'm still learning, and I want to learn more, and I'm going to have Jerry hook me up with the new fly rod.
We'll set you right up there, so, Tommy. You know, we'll make you a fly rodder yet.
There you go. And I enjoy doing it. So, anyway, carry on. What was you saying about it?
Fly rod or not, you know, catching Missouri smallmouth it's an amazing opportunity. I spoke about me being a kayak angler. I love kayak fishing, whether it be Lake of the Ozarks. Obviously, it's more of a recreational lake, so my time to fish on Lake of the Ozarks is usually 10 at night to 4 or 5 in the morning, if not watching that sun come up from the kayak. But we do float all the local streams and rivers around here. That's where them smallmouth love to be.
Yeah. What's your favorite? Then don't pick one just because anyone's sitting here, but I mean, just what would be your personal favorite on your experience that you've had so far?
Like river-wise?
Because I know you're originally from Kansas. How long have you been here in Missouri?
4 years almost.
So long enough to fish several. I mean,
I'm hoping to retire out of here.
I hope you do.
I don't mind Missouri at all.
Rivers, what is your favorite so far?
I mean, I love the Gasconade and Big Piney. They roll through Fort Leonard Wood, and it's limited access.
They're great, aren't they?
You know, you hook into even a 12-inch smallmouth, it fights like it's, you know, a 10-pounder.
It's funny you say that because there's times when I'll be smallmouth fishing and catching smallmouth, and then I'll hook a 15-inch largemouth, and I'll think, well, it's just a little guy this time. Mm-hmm. You know, and in all reality, that's the biggest fish I caught all day or whatever it was, but it's just the fight that largemouth gives in comparison to the smallmouth is not even comparable. It's almost like you're just dragging in an old towel or something.
Yeah. And we do it all, too. I mean, smallmouth, I really love smallmouth. In Kansas, not so many smallmouth. You know, I grew up bass fishing, catfish, and crappie fishing. which we got tons of that here, and we do that from our kayaks as well.
Yeah. So what is your top three if you was to pick? Obviously, you probably would pick smallmouth number one, and then what would be next? I just want to get to know you a little bit on and what you love, you know, because I love crappie fishing. I love catfishing. I do a lot of fishing. I mean, if it involves a fishing pole and a line and a lure, I'm going to be a part of it. I want to learn, you know, like the fly rod thing. It's never been the biggest thing because the Gasconade is not a trout fishery, you know, unless you're going on the Ruby Doo right where it dumps in. But as far as rye fish on the upper Gasconade, you're not going to catch any trout. So it's just never been a fly rod mindset when I, you know, fishing it. So what's your top three? You said smallmouth and then
Definitely smallmouth, largemouth, and I would have to say, you know, fighting a nice flathead.
Yeah.
Love it. I definitely want to get into some spoonbill snagging from the kayak.
Yeah.
A couple of our guys do it. One of our members from our Team Missouri here just got his captain license for snagging. He actually won Snag Masters last year.
Did he really?
A nice check. And I mean, he kills spoonbills. Not literally kills them, but I mean, they lay some spoonies out and they say it tastes pretty good. I'll try anything twice, but I haven't tried it yet. So
yeah, spoonbill is pretty good. And my buddy Seth is a big spooner, too. He likes snagging them spoonbill. He does it all, but he's a trout, crappie, everything. That's one thing.
All right, so you got to explain what snagging a spoonbill is.
Snagging is literally what it sounds like. You're okay. Snagging. So you've got a big old treble hook with a big weight. You know, so I'm just giving you one example so people can set it up different depending on what depths they are. But the way like Seth will do it, and I'm sure he'll correct me. He'll probably call me later and say, well, you said that wrong. Well, either way, this is my explanation of it. You take a big, long, heavy rod with heavy line, braid, the strongest line you can think of.
A telephone pole.
Pretty much. And you whip this thing out there real far, right? And you're basically going along the bottom. You're drifting, and you're literally jerking. I mean, it sounds pretty stupid if you ask me, but when you're on them, it's fun because when you hook one, I mean, the fight is on and you're fighting them. And I've done it, but
so it's totally by chance.
You'll see pods of
somewhat.
Okay. You'll kind of know where they're at. More often than not, you know, people will bank cast and stuff like that. But a lot of people troll with their high speed depth finders, go through a big pod of them, set out their lines, and troll through them. And they don't eat your typical baits, and so therefore there's a snagging season.
Okay,
and you go through and you snag them.
So. They feed on plankton, so they open their mouths and they feed on plankton. They're not like they're not a predator fish.
Huh.
But basically, you say it's all luck. It's not necessarily all luck. Just like there's so many people that say, well, I caught this, I caught that. Well, you just got lucky. I've always been the one to stick behind the anglers and say, well, no, there's experience involved and there's, you know, all the different factors. But in this case, a lot of it has to do with electronics. The newer electronics, you can literally see those. There's a new Garmin electronics has come out.
Panoptics.
Panoptics. I just seen it for the first time the other day, last Wednesday when I was on the show, or whenever it was. Anyway, we'll talk about that too because that was awesome.
You can literally see the fish.
You can tell what it is.
Exactly.
The shape of it. Mm-hmm. You can see your jig. My 16th ounce crappie jig, I could see it falling. And I could see it when I twitched it up and it went up. And I could see the crappie follow it up. It's like cheating. There's no way that should be legal. But
well, Lowrance is now in the game, too. They just created something cool, too.
Yeah.
I mean, most of those will probably get banned in the fishing circuits because they're too technique-specific. Yeah.
Well, they should be in the big circuits when they're paying $100,000, $50,000 for – you know what I mean? Because if everyone doesn't have it, it's definitely an unfair advantage to have that. I would feel bad. I would honestly feel bad if I won a big tournament with that, knowing that I probably wouldn't have done the same thing without it. But that's where the fishing world's gone is the electronics. I commented, you know, I'm one of them. You know, you guys know me well enough. If I'm thinking, I'm usually saying it. So I know there was a comment about who's the best stick on Lake of the Ozarks, you know, for bass fishing. And I said, well, take out electronics and personal brush piles, and then the list changes.
Oh yeah,
and it does. If you took out electronics, I don't use electronics, but I'm old school, you know, and I'm not competing against these guys for $100,000 either. I'm just out there fishing the way I always fish. So.
Well, you're out there throwing that Tackle HD, too. That's almost like cheating.
That's almost like cheating.
The best bait on the market, right?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it definitely helps to have that. I've caught some big fish. I did catch a 438, I think, in that Walmart tournament that ended up winning me a 65-inch TV.
One thing about we fly fishermen, we're still pretty much purist, you know?
Yeah,
purist?
True.
Yeah. Yeah, well, No, I have nothing against fly fishermen. Like I said, I love the outdoors and everything about it. In any way I can broaden my my tackle box.
Your
what's a good
and
word?
Experience.
My knowledge and experience.
Broaden your horizon, or something.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Broaden my horizon. That's what I meant to say. Then I'm all in. That's know, if it's a fly rod, a bait caster, or a Snoopy pole, I don't care. As long as I can catch them. But so now we've got it. Okay, so Fallen Outdoors literally covers anything in the outdoors. If you want to go, if it's that time for morels, I'm sure you would be glad to find someone to take them out and look for morels. And of course, that time of year, let's just double it up and go turkey hunting. We'll look in between.
Amen there. So. We'd love mushroom hunting.
Yep.
And something we hadn't talked about, we're probably running out of time if we want to talk about doing some hog hunting. It's a sensitive subject,
yeah.
You know, with the propositions up about hog hunting and stuff on state land and stuff. But, you know, running hogs or running dogs on hogs with no weapons involved but a knife.
That's it.
That's another
But them hogs, that's another thing people don't understand. And that's why I protect, or not protect, but I definitely back up the hog hunters, because hogs will tear, and they can create chaos on property.
They'll destroy a crop overnight.
Overnight. Yeah. They'll destroy it all.
A lot of damage created by them.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand. You know, some anti-hunters, some anti, you know, fish have feelings and all this kind of stuff.
But who doesn't love bacon? I mean,
yeah, really. If you don't like bacon, you're not American.
That's right.
Think,
bacon and Second Amendment kind of.
Yeah,
go
that's
hand
right.
In hand.
I think it was written. They were written together.
Yeah.
And the Second Bacon Amendment. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's another thing to talk about. And there's so much. You know, there's just so much to do in the outdoors that. It's endless. You know, there's always a season for something, whether it's deer hunting or turkey hunting or squirrel or rabbit or quail or pheasant or, you know, whatever it is. You can just keep going crappie and smallmouth. And, I mean, you can literally find something to do that someone enjoys to do. And with you guys broaden the group, and the more people and the more volunteers and the more people that want to help, then it just makes it that much easier to always take someone out and get their mind off of anything negative and make a 100% positive for them.
Well, you know, you're right. Talking about seasons there, Tommy. You can canoe, you can camp, depending on how hardy you happen to be.
Yeah.
Year around. You can float the rivers. Actually, the water temperature happens to be warmer than the air temperature.
Yeah, no, and that's the case right now. We'll talk about that next a little bit, actually, on our next segment. And we'll be right back. I'm Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information about what's going on in the world of outdoor recreation in the Ozarks and points beyond. This segment of our show is brought to you by the Missouri Trappers Association, dedicated to preserving the heritage and skills of trapping. Wild at Heart is giving away a $100 Amazon gift card. This could be yours. All you have to do is go to ESPN1073.com. It truly is simple. No strings attached. Just give them your name, phone number, and zip code. Just a way to get a hold of you, and this $100 Amazon gift card could be yours. Go enter now. We're still here, and we still got a whole crew of us here, and we're talking about the latest deer season, which is right in the mix of it right now, of the Missouri firearm season. But what we're going to talk about is some of the things you see out there. It's amazing on the things you'll see just being out in the woods, you know. And there's one saying I'll tell everyone, whether it's got to do with fishing, hunting, being outdoors in general. People ask about, well, how did you see, you know? They just wonder all these things. You know, time spent in the woods, time spent out in the water is irreplaceable. So the more time you spend out there, the better chance you have at experiencing something that you never had before, and it never ceases to amaze me. So getting on with what's going on, this, you know, we go out opening weekend, which was last weekend, and the first morning, me and my daughter Caitlin, she is so ate up with hunting now. So keep in mind, this is not youth season. And I'm like, this is my season. She's like, Dad. I'm like, okay. She's my daughter. I can't say no to her. So I take her out there. And we're hunting. We get out there. It's actually, yeah, it was just her. I was going to say it was her and her sister, but it wasn't her and her sister. So we're hunting, and we see this buck. Caitlin is, by the way, Caitlin is 14 years old. She just turned 15 last Monday. So this last past Monday, the 12th, November 12th. So, and she loves hunting. She loves fishing. She loves everything got to do with the outdoors, and I'm thankful for that because that is what I love to do, and I'm so glad to be able to be her hunting fishing buddy, as she calls me. And so we're out there, and she's doing the right thing, being patient, being quiet, doing all the things that you're supposed to do. She's spoiled, though. We're in a blind with a heater. So, and it was cold. If you guys remember last Saturday.
It was cold.
It was cold.
I got to stand at 12 degrees.
Yes, 12 degrees. There's people that were just complaining. Of course, me being the smart aleck I am, I posted a picture of us sitting in the blind with the heater and said, everyone's talking about how cold it is, and I'm not even wearing gloves.
Mm-hmm. You know? I saw that one.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're sitting out there, and we didn't see anything that we could shoot at that morning. And what's bad is I told you I was talking about me being an ethical hunter. I am going to teach her to be the same way. We seen this massive buck. I mean, it was huge. But it was about it was 230 yards away at the edge of a field working a scrape. It was just sitting there working. And she's begging me to shoot it. I was like, no, that's too far of a shot. That's too far of a shot for you to take first time. You know what I mean? She's 14 years old. I almost wish I'd let her do it, but I really thought I could get the deer to come in closer. So I rattled at that deer, and he perked up. I mean, you could tell he was one of the dominant bucks in that. I'm not saying he was the dominant buck, but he was a mature buck. Whenever you can see a rack that definitively from 200, almost 250 yards away, it's a good deer. And so anyway, he messed around there for 10 or 15 minutes, and I never would let her take a shot because I was pretty sure that I could get him drawn in, at least out of curiosity, to see what if there were some other bucks fighting, because I rattled at him, I grunted at him a little bit, but you know, I didn't want to get carried away, and then it just seems unnatural, you know, so I just stopped. Anyway, it never happened. So fast forward to that night, that evening, we go out, and she decides she don't want to go back to that spot. We just go to my normal stand in the woods. And so here we are sitting there, if you knew her growing up, I'd come home, and you know, Mike, you will know as well as I do, in Pulaski County we have an antler restriction. Mm-hmm. So you can't shoot a buck unless it's got 4 points on one side. Right. In the youth season, it doesn't matter. But remember, we're not in youth season anymore. So now those rules apply even as a youth. Mm-hmm. You've got to do the adult rules. So anyway, so we see this. Growing up, you know, she just always said, you know, did you see anything, Dad? I said, yeah, it was too small. So in her mind, she always thought, I can't shoot a small buck. I just can't do it. Dad wouldn't do it. I'm not going to do it. So when I first started taking her, when she was 7, 8, 9, 10, we'd see a deer, and it was a nice deer, just a 2, 2.5-year-old buck. I was like, there you go. You want to shoot? No, I'll wait for something bigger, Dad. Golly, kid, you're killing me here.
You can't eat the antlers, you know.
No, I know. Well, she's learning. So this year, I told her, I said, Kate, what are you going to shoot this year? She goes, anything that walks out there. If it's brown is down. She was all gung-ho. She just wanted to kill a deer so bad. So anyway, so that evening we went out, and we seen these two little does, and they were just year-and-a-half-old does. They wasn't very old, but she wanted to shoot one, you know. And it worked out. She put a perfect shot on the first doe. Close shot. We didn't have to track it far. She just tickled pink. You know, she's so excited. It wasn't on her birthday, but it was the weekend of it. And so she begged me to take her mom, and I ended up taking her mom, and we took her to my buddies over in Laclede County. And he's got a good place over there. But if you know about Laclede County, it don't have the antler restriction. And her mom, this is what tickled me the most more than anything, was her mom. She'd never been hunting before. First time she's ever been hunting in her life. I get her out there, and I told her, I said, hey, just don't think this is just like you just call them out and they just come out and you just shoot it. It don't work that way, okay? You know how many times I've sat and didn't see nothing for days? So we're sitting there, and she's just I mean, moving around, looking everywhere. And I'm like, you got to stop moving so much. You're worse than Caitlin. You know, and that probably wasn't the right thing to say either. But she was she was just like, well, I just don't want to miss it. I'm like, well, you just got to calm down and stop moving so much, you know. And so anyway, we're sitting there, and it's about an hour, hour and a half in. All of a sudden, here comes this buck come out of the, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. There's this buck, and she's I instantly know, okay, this buck isn't one that I would shoot. It's a younger buck, smaller. But this one was never seen a deer or hunted in her entire life. This is like a kid sitting right here as far as the mentality of what she's thinking. She's excited. So I get it, and I'm like, okay, get on him. Do you want to shoot him? And she's, heck yeah. I mean, this is the first time she's ever been hunting in her life. And there's no antler restrictions, so she gets on him. And I'm like, hey, whenever you're on him, as soon as you get on him, tell me, are you on him? I'll stop him. Are you on him? Yeah, yeah, I'm on him. Man, deer stops.
And then
I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? She, I can't find the safety. I'm like, so I reach down. I'm like, hold on. And then he starts walking again. So I take it off safety. Okay, it's off safety. It's off safety. You got to get on him. Get on him, and I'll stop him again. Are you on him? I can't find him in the scope. Like, you got to be kidding me. Okay. I found him. I'm like, are you sure you're on him? Hold on. Now he's about ready to leave. He's gonna be gone. Are you on him? Yeah, I'm on him. Okay, man, it took me a couple times. He finally stopped again. I thought, if this is a mature buck, he'd have been gone.
Yeah.
You know, this deer just young and dumb. It stops perfectly broadside. Pow! An enemy just drops like a sack of potatoes. She was shaking. What it was I didn't realize it because, you know, us been hunting as long as we have, we just have that, you know, you don't really get that unless it's just something massive. And this wasn't. This was just but to her it was.
Buck fever.
She goes, I'm sorry, I couldn't get on him because I was shaking so bad. The scope just kept going like this.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was like, you know, this is amazing. This is the first time. This is literally like taking a kid hunting because she'd never been hunting her entire life, ever. And now all she talked about was, when are you going to take me back? Will you take me again? Will you please take me again? And now it's a fight between the daughter and the mom on who gets to go hunting. And I'm like, girls, do you not realize this is my time? What did I do by ever taking you guys? Before, it was my solitude to go out there and go hunting, and that was my way to get away and you know, enjoy the outdoors. But anyway, I can't complain. It was a pretty special weekend for me for them to shoot those deer, you know, the first deer. It was pretty amazing. So, which Caitlin had actually shot a deer before, but we didn't find it. So, did I tell you about that? The deer she shot youth season? I told you the story about that.
Tell me again.
Yeah, well, she shot the deer. Do you want me to tell you the whole story or just
the bridge version?
Yeah, we'll just have to do a quick version of it. So, basically, she shot the deer. She said she put a really good shot. She said, Dad, I shot. I said, did you shoot it in the vital? She goes, I was afraid it was going to take off, so I just shot it right in the middle of the rib cage. And I'm like, well, thanks for being honest with me, because that's important when I go to try to find blood and look for it, know where he shot was, whatnot. So I looked that night. We had flashlights around. We're looking everywhere. There's four or five of us out there. I didn't see nothing. I truly thought she missed this deer. So then the next morning she went to school. I went back because I was off that week. I went back and looked again during the daylight. Nothing, not a drop of blood or nothing. I looked in all the bushes, briars, the stuff you'd think they'd hide in. Couldn't find this deer anywhere. I even went back to the woods where it come out from, thinking it circled back around, because I know a lot of times deer know, hey, I just come from this safe place. I'm going back to that safe place because I'm hurt now. Never did find it. So I thought, man, she just missed that deer. It was like 4 days later she called me, because this was over to grandma's place. She called me, and I guess seeing out in the field some buzzards, she goes, Dad, I told you I didn't miss that deer. I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, there's buzzards out there. So I got there, and we walked. I said, where are they at? And it's just like 4 or 5 foot tall grass. We walk out there, and as soon as we get close, they come flying up out of the weeds, and sure enough, there's that doe laying there in that field dead.
Yep.
I was so mad at myself. I'm still kicking myself for it. But, you know, that's part of it. I don't waste meat. You know, that's one thing I don't do. Anything I do, I try to preserve it. But
due diligence.
Due diligence.
You did what you could to
find
it.
Yeah, I did. I looked, and I truly believe I did, you know. So, anyway, but it was pretty special. It's been a great year for me and my daughter in particular. And like I said, she just had her birthday. She got that deer Saturday. So, it's been pretty special. But I just literally burned up that entire episode or segment. So, Jerry, what do you think?
Well, I'm Jerry Cook, your co-host, and coming up, we'll be talking with fly fishing guide Damon Spurgeon. This is Wild at Heart. Stick around.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. This segment of our show is brought to you by Advanced Performance Shooting in Waynesville, offering classes on firearms use and safety. Could you use a little extra holiday cash? Couldn't we all? Here at Wild at Heart, we're giving away a $100 Amazon gift card, no strings attached. All you have to do is go to ESPN107.com and enter. Do it now while you're thinking about it. All you have to do is enter your name, your phone number, and your zip code, and you'll be eligible to win this $100 gift card from Amazon. We're happy to have here in the studio with us today fly fishing guide Damon Spurgeon. Welcome to the show, Damon.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to talk to you a little bit about streamer fishing and nymph fishing, which I know is your specialty.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about that a couple of weeks ago, but I'd like to hear about this from a pro.
Well, it's you know it's that time of year. Winter's upon us. You know, it's I believe the first day of winter technically calendar year is December 20th.
I think we got hit early with it.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, it's kind of back to the way it used to be, but you know, winter fishing means nymphs, low and slow. You know, those trout start to move into their winter holes, and it's not, you know, you can't think of it in terms as these trout waters are, you know, in the summertime they're looking for that ultra cold oxygen rich water, you know, close to the springs. Anywhere there's a spring, those trout are going to be. You know, in the winter, the trout I like to think of as kind of prima donnas. You know, they're just kind of image conscious and have their favorite places. So, you know, in the summertime, what I like to tell a lot of people, clients and so on, is we're wading, especially in the dog days, you know, we're wading through, and you can always kind of tell you hit that cool spot, or if, you know, somebody upriver happens to take a leak, I guess, if I can say that on the air, you know, it's going to be the warm water, but you're looking for those cold water areas that, basically in the wintertime, those are going to be the warmer water areas. You know, they hold that 50 degree temperature or 50 to 54, 55 degrees that those trout are really going to move in those areas for winter fishing. And if you keep those kind of in the back of your mind, then, you know, it could set yourself up to be successful. You know,
yeah, a lot of people, you know, your purists are typically dry fly fishermen throwing mm-hmm. slow action rods and want to see that rising trout. That works great in the summertime. This time of year, that doesn't quite cut it.
Nope. You can basically take that and throw it out the window. You might have, you know, on those kind of freak 60 degree December, January days, there might be a small midge hatch, something that comes on. But it's something that it will kind of help develop your repertoire, I guess. If you think small, you think low, you think slow, you're going to be successful, you know.
Yeah, if there's a hatch going on this time of year, it's been my experience, it's typically a very small cream-colored midge
yep.
coming up off the
yep.
water.
Extremely prevalent on the Merrimack.
Yeah, yeah, and even on the current, mm-hmm. you'll find those in about a number 20 or even 24
oh, yeah.
size.
Yeah.
Very tiny.
Now, how about you explain to John, do you know what a midge is? What is a midge? If you're going to explain that to the listeners out here, especially like some listeners that may listen from the bass world or whatnot. You know what I mean? So explain to them maybe what a midge is in comparison to...
A midge, what I think of it as is the devil on a hook. And I'll explain why. It's extremely small. So you're thinking size 20 to 24. Jerry, what do you think? I mean, that's... I don't even have to size your pinky nail.
Oh,
maybe.
Very
small.
And
why would something that small? Because I'm just going to tell you straight up. The way I think when I fish, the bigger the better. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't go for quality. I go for quantity. I go for quality.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather catch a handful of really big fish all day rather than a bunch of mediocre smaller
mm-hmm.
fish. Just,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless I'm tournament fishing, and even then, that's the way I do it.
I've got a really good buddy in Arkansas on the White, Matt Milner with Rising River
right.
Guides. He... you know, he, of course, is right there in the middle of streamer, you know, it's streamer madness. And they're always catching, you know, 20, 30-inch brown trout, just ridiculous size to these things. And so I asked him the last time I was down there in August, I said, what's the biggest one you've caught so far, brown trout? And he said, I think 33, 34 inches, something like that. I said, what'd you catch that on? He said it was a size 22 midge. And they, of course, the pump the stomachs, you know, to see what they're eating. Had something crazy, like 13 or 14 ounces of midges in its stomach. So that big fish, you know, a 10, 12-pound fish is sitting there eating these little bitty microscopic flies where they could just, you know, eat a finger-length rainbow or something and get that amount of calories and, you know,
in one meal,
a fraction of the time. You know.
Well, I'm sure there's times they do that, but it seems like it's a lot more abundant with fly fishing, because when you talk about bass fishing, you throw a little stuff, you're going to catch a little fish. That's just the majority of what happens, you know. But you throw bigger stuff, but at the same point, I do understand that big fish still eat small baits. Mm-hmm. It's just not very often in like the small, in my experience anyway. Maybe I need to try throwing smaller stuff more. But I'm learning. You know, I'm learning that your guys' lingo in the fly fishing world, and that's what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. What does he say on old Joe Dirt? I'm a turkey base me. So here we go.
Does the water temperature have an effect on that, the size of the fish that are eating? Colder the water, smaller the bait type of thing?
If it makes sense, by it does and it doesn't, if that makes sense.
I got you.
You know, it really does, you know, in a lot of the bigger fish, you know, we were just talking about the White River, you know, it's extremely cold, you know, so they're predominantly, those fish are going to grow. There's going to be bigger fish in there, but their rate of growth is going to be a lot faster. And naturally they're, you know, I know they've tried to introduce the Bonneville cutthroat down there. They've been successful with that. They stock it with rainbows every year in 8-9 inches. Well, a 34, 35 inch brown trout could annihilate an 8 or 9 inch rainbow and do.
See, that's something else I was going to ask you, Damon. How do you determine when you want to go with like an 8 or 9 inch rainbow pattern or, whatever, tiny midge, you know, however big that is. I mean, a tiny little midge.
And it's been my experience, Tommy, that in really it's not just my experience. It's kind of a common belief that when the water is on its way up, you know, and this can be the same for any type of fishing, but when the water's on its way up or it's stained or there's not a lot of junk floating through the water, stuff like that, that's when you throw your streamers. That's when those fish are in ambush mode. You know, they can get out and not be seen and do the most damage. That's when you throw your big baits. Whenever it's clear, and that's, of course, you got to shift gears, go to lighter tippet. That's whenever you go low and slow with the smaller stuff, the 20 to 24 midges. Yeah. And
well, that makes a lot more sense to me now that you put it that way. It really does. Just like on a dark, cloudy day, it's more of a topwater, or they're more aggressive. You know, you can throw things; they'll venture out, and instead of being hunkered down underneath that root wad or log or boulder or whatever it is,
it is kind of weird because you know it all goes back again. And this is a really weird way of thinking about it. But I've always thought of it this way for some reason. But those image conscious people, you know, back to the prima donna. When the water's clear, you know, they want to make sure all the other fish see them eating something small. Whenever it's muddy, French fries, Twinkies, you know what I mean? They're all going.
That's right. Exactly.
Let's get nice and fat, you know.
That's a good analogy.
And
no
that's
one's
exactly
looking.
What they do. And you know, you mentioned a dark, cloudy day. That's when the browns really come out from their hiding places because they don't have to worry about predators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
You know, on the Merrimack River, for example, where Damon and I both have fished a lot, you know, eagles are common there. And it's not uncommon to catch a fish that's got claw marks on her, talon marks on
it. Every year there seems to be, you know, a few more eagles.
Yeah.
Which is good to see, you know, you can really tell the fish that that have been either hit or came close, you know, to getting it, but are a lot harder to catch.
Oh, I guarantee they are.
Lesson learned, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen eagles catch more fish down there some days than I did.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
That's funny.
But I I love the way you explained the differences there between the midges and the streamers there. And as you know, I'm a big streamer fisherman, mm-hmm. and by contrast, you're a big nymph fisherman. And there's room for both styles. I've just always liked throwing streamers, articulated streamers in particular, because they look like bait fish. Mm-hmm. Usually mm-hmm. big fish are going to eat. Well, it's just nature. Big fish eat little fish. Mm-hmm. And if you can throw a streamer that looks like a bait fish, a shad, like down on Tanicomo, shad are prevalent. Throw a white articulated streamer, that brown or rainbow's going to say, ah, nice juicy meal here. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to expend a lot of calories, but I'm sure going to take in a bunch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of experimented over time with tandem streamer rigs. You know, mm-hmm. you've got your sink tip line. Rio's got a fantastic sink tip line. And a lot of these lines, you'll see it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 IPS, and that's just your sink rate, inch right. per second. You know, you can use those if you're not a diehard and you just have your standard 5 or 6 weight floating line. You can pair it with a VersaLeader, which basically is going to allow that line and sink rate still apply to, but it's going to allow that line to get down deeper. But then basically what I'll do is take a heavier tippet, and it's not synonymous with your 7 or your 6X tippet. It's just not. These fish, when they hit these streamers, it's a ravenous hit. You know, it's like a gremlin, you know, and a lot of times you have that lighter tippet, it's going to pop it right off there. So I kind of the general rule of thumb is no heavier than 3X, but no lighter than 5X. And depending on the fish, I mean, there's always that one fish that's going to be out there that'll surprise you, and you try to avoid that. So a 4X would be about right. And do a smaller you know, a streamer, whether it be a woolly bug or whatever up top, and then your bigger, maybe even an articulated streamer on the bottom, and it gives that kind of a schooling bait fish feel. So,
Damon, we've burned up this segment already, guy, so we'll be right back with Damon Spurgeon. I'm your co-host, Jerry Cook.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment of our show is brought to you by Colton Steakhouse and Grill in Rolla, where we know what's at stake. Also by Trout & Son, serving you with boats, motors, trailers, and accessories since 1972. Located on County Road 1000 in St. James. It's always fun at Trout & Son's. Wild at Heart is giving away a $100 Amazon gift card. This could be yours. All you have to do is go to ESPN1073.com and enter. $100. You can't win if you don't enter. So go to ESPN1073.com today. Enter your name, your zip code and your phone number, and you're eligible to win. Welcome back, Damon.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, we were talking about tippet and so on at the end of the last segment. You know, I've seen, in fact, I've had it happen to me, brown trout do that famous roll that they do mm-hmm. and break off on 6X tippet.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have, believe it or not, extremely sharp teeth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And reference to the tippet question, Jerry, it basically, whenever you're nymph fishing, whether it be indicator nymph or whatever, your hook set's going to be totally different. You
right.
know, a lot of times, depending on your retrieve, you know, using a streamer, whether it's tandem or it's just your single articulated streamer, they're going to set the hook themselves. You know,
yeah.
a lot of times you get the tail down bite and, you know, they're hooked in the bottom of the lip or what have you. And, like you said, those teeth, it's almost like a little miniature pike, you know, and of course the teeth get bigger, you know, when the fish is bigger too. So
absolutely. And you're talking about tandem streamer rigs there. I fished tandem woolly buggers, but I've mm-hmm. never fished tandem articulated streamers. That's a handful there.
It is a handful. And at the same time, basically how I do it is I incorporate either a blood knot or a triple surgeon's knot for a, you know, drop a 4 or 5 inch tag off the top and run about 18 inches down and obviously drop my smaller one off that tag end. And then I'm not a big fan of your 6-inch articulated streamers. I mean, I use them when I need to,
mm-hmm.
but the Merrimack's not the White River. It's never going to be the White River.
Right.
So you really can get away with your 3-3.5-inch articulated or just solid body streamer.
Yeah, and as you know, that's what I have tied primarily mm-hmm. is 3-3.5-inch mm-hmm. Articulated streamers because they really do work best
Absolutely.
Around here.
Now, are you guys just talking about trout? When you're talking about these lures and presentations you're speaking of, are you talking about – okay, so let's talk about – because in these waters you're speaking of, I know you use trout fish and smallmouth fish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So is there a difference if you're gonna turn from – if say you're on a guide trip and you're trout fishing mm-hmm. and your client looks at you and says, I want to catch some smallmouth.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
Basically the same techniques. There's certain areas, you know, especially if we're floating, you know, you kind of – and you know, Tom, you kind of have that mental – line in your head, okay, you cross that, well, now we kind of need to shift gears.
Yeah.
And for me it's water temperature. You know, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, in the winter it's kind of no holds bar.
I was that's one of the questions I was going to talk to you about. You was talking about the water temperature and once it got a certain temperature, what them fish do. I was just talking to my buddy about this yesterday, and mm-hmm. we're going to go Friday smallmouth fishing because we've had such a huge snap of cold weather,
yep.
those smallmouth are already thinking wintertime, winter hole, winter mm-hmm. hole. Winter,
and so, you know what that means as well as I do. That fall crunch, that oh window's getting small.
I know.
So, you know, basically if you can hit that right, and the Merrimack's kind of different because you have that warmer water coming from the park, and it's such a big shot in the arm or fin, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty cheesy, but, you know, I went there.
kind of like my turkey basement.
But, you know, those – it's kind of a good place for all those fish. You know, trout obviously are going to be there, but those smallmouth will stay, you know, in that 3-4 mile range through the summer. But then in the winter, they're going to crowd up there, you know, the first mile outside the park. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of old-timers and such over through the years that January, February – time frame, they won't fish any other time except then.
Yeah.
In that mile and mile and a half stretch. And we've caught some good ones, no giants, but, you know, as well as I do, it takes that one cast. And approach-wise, nymph fishing, you know, you're pretty well just going after the trout. But you tie on a streamer, you just better hang on.
Yeah, because,
you know,
no
it's
telling.
Anytime.
Right.
Anytime.
And that's why I think, and I've told you this, Jerry, I think I would definitely be a streamer type of fisherman
yeah.
when I move over to the fly rod side of it, just because.
I think most bass fishermen who convert over mm-hmm. From bass fishing to fly rod fishing usually are streamer fishermen.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not converting completely over.
I'll
just kind of go back and forth, you know, hopscotch.
I mainly throw streamers as well.
Yeah.
Good.
Obviously, you're using a much larger size style hook than yeah. what you are for the nymphs and stuff. But yeah, streamers is where it's at.
Well, yeah, on a nymph, like Damon pointed out, you're using a 20, 22, even a 24. And I have my streamers tied with a number 6 front hook, a number 8 stinger hook. So mm-hmm. there's a quite a difference in hook size there.
In you know, streamer fishing, it's so – you see so many people, you know, cast – make one cast in a certain run.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big believer, especially in fly fishing, is you've got to find – if you look and say, man, that looks fishy, that to me says, okay, you think there's structure or whatever it is that holds fish. But also, whatever you choose to throw at those fish, that water can fish it for you. And I'll kind of explain what I mean by that, but – basically, if you're indicator nymphing, that water is going to move those flies.
Right.
And all you have to do is be on it. Keep mending, keep mending, keep mending, drag free. And it's going to do all the movement that it would with a natural fly coming down. Mm-hmm. It's the same way with a streamer. And I have 3 standard retrieves on a streamer. So if I cast, you know, and I'm just going to let that thing bounce off the bottom. I'm not going to pull. I'm not going to do anything. And a lot of times, that's how those fish want it. The next one's just a kind of a short pop, you know, and just kind of get that arch in action and
like a kangaroos. Wounded bait fish or
like
something.
A wounded bait fish.
That's what I would like right there because that's the exact same way I throw a fluke.
Yep, you know, exactly.
And I do really well on a white fluke.
So, exactly. Yeah. And then the last one's your standard, just, you know, just pop it back to you as fast as you can.
Like a bait fish who's trying to escape from from something. And but I have found that the wounded bait fish seems to work.
It's really hard, especially, you know, when if there's a good solid fish in there, you know, and they see a wounded bait fish, they're going to have to think awful hard. You know, it's how am I going to pass this meal up? Yeah. You know, I don't know if I want to do that or the guy behind me, you know, he's going to eat everything. So it's definitely hard. You do those three retrieves and you don't even get a bump. Move on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You've got to work that hole, though.
Exactly.
What it comes down to.
Exactly.
And like you, I've seen guys who'll make one or two casts into a hole. Oh, there's nothing here. Move on. That's not always correct.
No.
But you got this. You got both sides of it. You know, you got a guy that might make one or two casts, and you got the other guy that'll make 30, you know, or just, I mean, he's working it over, and he hasn't even got a bite.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there's got to be a happy medium there when you know, okay, like you worked those three presentations.
Time to move on.
Time to move on. I agree. It's a good point.
But, you know, you pointed out earlier that the Merrimack or the current will never be the White River. That's entirely different water.
It is.
You have to fish it entirely different. I fish the White. I like fishing the White.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's nothing like the Merrimack or the current.
You know, and as far as just, it, you know, it's home for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, the nostalgia is pretty hardcore there. But the White, you know, it's just that overwhelming feeling that this next cast you could literally land a world record brown trout.
Absolutely.
You know, it's always there.
And I've seen some nice cutthroats come out of there,
absolutely.
Too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the growth rate on those, I don't have the figures with it, but it's incredible how well those fish are doing down there.
Well, I tell you what, at Sowbug Roundup, I believe it was, Lisa Ballou, who guides with Jeremy Hunt down there, was showing me a picture of, I think it was a 22-inch cutthroat that she had pulled out of there. That's an awesome cutthroat.
Yep, and just a beautiful, just stunning fish. And you know, it was kind of state-of-the-art how they did that, basically digging a hole in the river and taking crates and putting the crates with the eggs in there, and eventually they just took off, you know, and are thriving. So,
and, you know, it's amazing, too, how well the brook trout have done down there.
Yep. You know, you can – that's the closest place to us here in Missouri. You know, you could go down and get a grand slam.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of people do. You know, that's the rainbow trout, the Bonneville cut, the brook, the brown, and, you know, it's – kind of a feather in your cap, you know, as a fisherman to be able to do that and not have to go and spend thousands of dollars to go to your Montanas or
exactly.
wherever.
Yeah. I was just talking to a customer today in New Jersey, and he was, in fact, I gave you his information. He wants to come down and fish with you, but he was talking about how expensive it's become to go to some of these places and how heavily they're pounded now.
Absolutely. You know, and it's kind of the, you know, fly fishing as a whole, it's trendy's not the correct word for it, but just the new generations put their own spin on it.
Yeah.
You know, and are dead set on fishing one way, and as my dad would say, you're not well rounded is what he would, you know. But
and nobody wants to not be well rounded.
Exactly. You know, and you know, it's all a personal preference.
Yeah,
it really is. You
it
know,
is.
Of course the younger generation and there's nothing wrong with it. Well, they're all the big streamer guys, you know, and it's awesome to see. It's awesome to see how, you know, we're responsible in fishing and hunting and anything. We evolve it.
Hey,
you know?
Damon. Yeah. He was talking about being well-rounded. In our next segment, we're going to talk about being well-rounded with some wintertime smallmouth tactics.
Absolutely.
Stick around. I'm Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information about the Ozarks and a few points beyond. This segment is brought to you by Gar Truck and Equipment and the Outdoor Superstore, your Husqvarna dealer located on the North Outer Road in St. James. As everyone has known already, we're giving away a $100 gift card here at Wild at Heart. It's a $100 Amazon gift card. All you got to do is go to ESPN1073.com. It's pretty simple. No strings attached, folks. All you need is your name, phone number, and your zip code. That's it. Sign up now for your chance to win that $100 gift card. We're back, and we're talking about wintertime smallmouth fishing. And when we're talking about smallmouth fishing, obviously we're probably talking about stream fishing because we don't have very many lakes around where we live that have smallmouth. There are a few in the Ozarks, but I think the four of us sitting here, or five of us sitting here, but the guys sitting here are definitely stream fishermen over reservoirs.
Absolutely.
So Here's my take on smallmouth fishing. It's awesome. Wintertime fishing, said. Double awesome.
Yep.
It's even better.
Yep. Mic so, drop. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many people that don't understand how awesome, how great it could be, the experience. And if you know what to do and where to go to catch smallmouth when it is freezing cold, I mean freezing cold, and everyone, my clients in particular, well, how do you know when it's good? I said, the colder it is, the better. The longer it's been cold, the better it is.
Yep.
And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, just wait. They're like, well, can we wait for a warmer day? Sure. As long as that water temperature is cold, that's all I care about. I don't care about the calendar. Calendars don't mean nothing to me. All you know, like you said, Damon, all that matters to me is that water temperature because those fish don't have a calendar down underneath there. Mm-hmm. I'll say, okay, well, it's April 17th. It's about time to spawn here. You know, they don't care. All they care about is that water temperature. So
I've been out there when the guides on my rod were freezing up, you know, and it was good fishing.
I've been out there hundreds of times with guides freezing up. Matter of fact, I just bought a heater. We was talking about it earlier on one of the segments for my daughter for hunting. And I'm like, this is so awesome for this wintertime fishing. I'm going to have this in the jet boat. But, yeah, the one thing I will say about wintertime smallmouth fishing is I do not give away a lot of information. Mm. So I probably won't tell very many people unless I really, really trust you exactly where the spot is because – it can be ruined. And I've seen spots happen that way on the gas game in particular that I took my little brother, for example, several years ago, and I'll try to make this quick. But, and he called me one day. He knew where the spot was because I'd been taking him. I said, you don't tell anyone about this. Well, he's a kid. He's an 18-year-old kid, 19, whatever it was, 17. He lived. Anyway, he called me and said, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm fishing. Are you at the spot? And I'm like, well, yeah. It's January, you know, or just whatever it was. Yeah, I'm at the spot. Oh, you careful? Come on. I said, come on out. I'll come get you. Well, when he called me and said, hey, I'm here, I come over there, and he's got a buddy with him. I'm like, Ryan, what are you doing? I mean, all right, so come on. Fast forward to several years later, this same person that found out the spot, his buddy, ends up taking all these other people and the other people and the other people, and they start taking these smallmouth out and eating them. And, of course, I'm
– oh, that's – yeah, sensitive
it's,
subject.
It's man. Like – it's a very sore subject for me, and, yep. you know, it's – this person in particular has me blocked. I'll put it that way because, and I just tell them how it is, you know, man. Anyway. So, getting to the spots. Do you have any spots like that that are whenever they're there.
Absolutely, you know. Yeah. It's the every cast experience.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. And that's what I was want to talk about. You know, for all you people out there that have never got to experience smallmouth fishing in the wintertime, if you ever have the right experience, you will fall in love with it. You really will. Just bundle up and hold on to your rod because once you find them, it is on fire. And you just have to go with the right person that knows what they're doing, knows where the spots are. Damon Spurgeon be a good one. I know a few spots myself. I'm just saying there's people out there that know them. We're not the only ones that know them. But what are some of the things that you like to use? Because I'm going to talk about some of the things that I like to use.
Mainly all I use is anything heavy. Anything that can get me down in those deeper holes. And I'm fortunate that through the winter and that stretch of the river that I'm on, there's very few holes that have enough water, you know, be in your teens as far as depth.
Yeah.
I'm not really giving away any spots, but at the same time, it's kind of hard. It's inaccessible unless you're with a boat.
Yeah, Deeper holes are definitely where you're going to find them. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you got to find it yourself. I mean, yep. For you listeners out there, we'll give you a little bit of clues, but you just got to figure it out yourself.
And it's a lot – the same can be said for crappie, too, on rivers.
It is.
You know, there's certain places that for some reason it always baffled me, but they're there every year.
Exactly. And I will contest to that. When you catch one, you can catch another and another. As long as mine on a Gasconade are real finicky. If you get too close to them, you get hung up, and you pull too hard on that brush, it's over.
Yep.
You might as well either as lightly as you can break it or leave, and come back. Yep. But anyway, so getting to my smallmouth, I don't want to give away too much, but this is what.
We're waiting to hear your bait choices. That's what we're waiting for.
I figured you was.
I'm a skirted jig kind of guy, a deep heavy jig, or even, a skirted Ned rig or something like that.
Yeah.
That's one of my go-to, especially on our, our nice river systems here.
But, Damon, our buddy Jeff Trigg, he has his favorite spots, too, and as you well know, and we've talked about them before, but he sure ain't going to tell me where they are.
Or me, it's still River X.
River X, yeah.
River X.
Well, in the same way, I'm going to talk about the spot that in particular I'm going to speak of. I will say this. It is not, and I'm not lying, it is not on the Gasconade. But I've got a spot on the river that me and my buddy Jack fish. And everyone's always like, where are you at? And I'm like, you love to know, wouldn't you? But it's an amazing spot. I can literally close my eyes and do as many circles as I want and cast out there. And it's like, there he is, and fight on. And it's amazing. There's one bait that I won't speak of, but I'll tell you a couple of the baits that I do use and that work good. But there's one that I just don't want to give away on the radio anyway. Not saying I won't tell you guys, but I won't talk about it on the radio. But a skirted jig is definitely a go-to that I've used for many years. That's actually what my biggest smallmouth ever come off of, was that skirted jig, a 5/16 ounce jig.
Yep.
And then the second one, you guys were talking about your streamers and whatnot. I love jerk baits. Mm-hmm. In the wintertime, it's a go-to bait. I throw a jerk bait, and I throw a big one. I throw a big mega bass jerk bait or an RC. I even go old school and throw a Smithwick Rogue. Something like that. It's a big bait. But like I said, I'm a big bait, big fish, quality over quantity.
You talking about a suspending jerk? Or what type? How far are you trying to get down there? I mean,
it
it's
depends.
Based on the water level, I know.
It really depends. And it's just mainly what you want to do is you got a basis. You're going to start off, hey, what have I done good here off with in the past? Mm-hmm. I've done good on this 4 to 6 foot suspending jerk bait. Well, then you start with that. And then you just adjust. And that's one thing that I always say that I pride myself on, and I know I'm sure Damon does too, is learn what the fish tell you to do.
Yep.
Don't go out there and just fish on past experience and say, well, they just won't bite. That's my biggest pet peeve when it comes to fishing. People come home, and if I do it, I'll tell you the same thing. I just didn't figure them out. If you don't catch them that day, I don't care if it's January 2nd, and you can't figure them out, I guarantee you some of them fish were eating that day. Yep. You just couldn't figure out how to get them to bite what you had.
They always just like have people. To eat. They're always eating.
That's it. But, the old saying, well, they just wasn't biting today. Well, no, you probably just didn't adjust to what they were telling you to do. Mm-hmm. You threw the same old black and blue or the same whatever it was,
Yep.
And because, well, that's what I caught them off of before in this one spot. Mm. So, anyway.
Versatile, yep.
Yeah, so I adjust to it, and I can attest this to a lot of the tournaments that I fish. So even like the tournaments I fish, I'm not a starter. Most of the time in those tournaments, it's like, man, what the heck's going on? But we figure them out, and over the course of the day, it may only be the last 2 or 3 hours that we actually are catching all our fish, but because we figured out a pattern, and once we figured them out, we're on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. But that's what I was getting back to the jerkbait. I'll start with what I've done good off in the past, and then – if my buddy's throwing one thing, I'll throw something totally different.
Yep.
Similar, but different. Maybe a deeper diver, maybe a different color, whatever it is. And then we'll start figuring a pattern out depending on how they're biting to each one. But them wintertime smallmouth, like I said, whenever you find them, if you catch one fish in the dead of the winter, and I say dead of the winter when the water temperature is below 45, 40, in the 40s, lower 40s in particular, you catch one fish, I promise you there's more there. I promise you.
Something's holding them, man.
Something's holding them there, and they're stacked in there. They don't just they're not just spread out throughout the river. They're in isolated areas.
You were talking about being creatures of habit. I have to confess to that because I typically will start off with a white streamer.
Yeah, well, and that's natural for
but
most
I'll
people.
But I'll adjust,
do that.
That's
the thing is there's nothing wrong with starting off, having a basis to start off of, but then. You just got to adjust from it because there's so many times that I'm throwing my favorite lure or lures and it just wasn't working. And I had to go to something that I was like, well, I've got to, I got to do something different. This is not working. So,
and Damon, I believe you told me one time one of the black patterns that I got in an articulated streamers, you were doing well with it down on the Merrimack.
12-inch smallies on a 6-inch Heisenberg articulated streamer. I mean, that's a testament to their attitude.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Such a fun fish.
Yeah, they're amazing fish. So let's go around. What's your guys' biggest smallmouth any time of the year? We'll start with you, Damon.
I would say, I don't know if it counts or not, but on the
was it in the Ozarks?
No, it was.
Let's go with Ozarks. What's your biggest Ozarks smallmouth?
I would say 17 inches, probably.
Yeah.
Which is relatively standard.
Yeah.
Fly rod, of course, on the Merrimack there, but not too far out of the park.
No, that's nice.
That was a February fish as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it didn't take me very long to basically figure out what it was, you know, without just the fight alone, you know.
What about you, Mike?
Hitting sandbars with a skirted tackle HD jig.
Yeah.
18 and a half
off
the kayak.
Wow. That's awesome. That's a heck of a fish.
That's a big fish.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got my partner and another kind of a branch of the Fallen Outdoors is our kayak angler, or the Fallen Outdoor kayak anglers, a group of kayak anglers, and Jeremy Mitchell, he's an avid kayaker, and he's constantly hitting 22 inch smallies on the Gasconade, big piney.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good fishery. Well, you know what? This segment is about over with, but we're not done yet. We still got one more, and there's no reason why we can't continue this conversation.
Let's do it.
So we'll stay tuned. We'll be right back talking more about smallmouth fishing, in particular winter smallmouth fishing. We'll be right back. This is Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back. I'm Tommy Bench, and you're listening to Wild at Heart. I'm here with my guest, my co-host, Jerry Cook, and my guest, Damon Spurgeon and Mike Unruh. We've been talking about smallmouth fishing, and like I said, in particular, winter smallmouth fishing. And the last segment, we were talking about our biggest Ozark smallmouth so far to date. And I believe Damon's was 17-plus, and Mike had an 18.5 on a tackle HD craw. And what about you, Jerry? What is your biggest smallmouth? And it don't have to be just be your necessarily your biggest. We'll start with the biggest. We'll talk about memorable, because there's always that memorable catch that may not be the biggest, but it was just the way it played out, you know. So
it's one I truly was not expecting. It was down on the Merrimack, not far out of the park, and I was really fishing for trout and hooked into a smallmouth that I would have sworn was a big brown, but was about a 15-inch smallie on a white woolly booger.
Wow. Wow. Well, see, here's the difference. It's almost like, I know you folks can't see it because we're on the radio, but in the studio here, there's myself that is a casting/spinning rod fisherman, angler, and then you got a fly rod fisherman. Then you have a majority of a spinning, and then another fly rod. So yeah, I noticed both the fly rod guys were talking about. That's the one thing I will bring up. So they're 17 and 15-inch respectively, smallmouth were caught on fly rods, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one other thing that I will bring up, because that's something I've never done. I never caught a fish that big on a fly rod as far as smallmouth, but challenge accepted. I'm
going to
try. So.
It's a memorable moment, no matter the size of the smallie.
That's right.
Next thing we know, we'll have to be getting you down to Belize after.
Yeah, I know for sure.
Baby tarpon that only weigh 50 pounds.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Even bone fishing.
Or bone fish or permit. Yeah.
I will say, I've always been a homebody. So whether that's a good thing or bad thing, I've just been a homebody. After I, got out of school, a lot of my peers would say, I can't wait to get out of here. I'm moving away. And I've always wanted to stay here. I just love where I live. And I thought I just had everything. I don't know what else is out there. Now I know a little bit more because my life experience being almost 40 years old now. But before I didn't know. But, man, smallmouth fishing, deer hunting, turkey hunting, mushrooms, and just lakes, rivers, streams. There's so much to offer here. I just couldn't imagine there'd be much more to offer.
Mm-hmm. It's all right here in the Ozarks.
Yeah.
And a lot of people really do not realize that. As I was telling Damon earlier, and I actually gave him this guy's contact information, but he lives in New Jersey. And he had no idea what we had to offer here in the Ozarks of Missouri. And after we got into a really good conversation, he said, I want your guides' contact information. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll pass your information on to Damon. He'll be in touch with you.
There you go.
Well, and this guy's fished all around the world, too, by the way.
Oh, trust me. You know, with myself, I've been guiding for 11 years now. You know, over the course of 11 years, you meet a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that's what I really got taught the lesson, that where we live is a true blessing, where we live. It really is, because you see these people from all different walks of life that come down and just will literally look around and say, man, you live in paradise. This is absolutely beautiful. Yeah, you live in paradise. You have no idea how lucky you guys are to live here. These are clients that are from Wisconsin or wherever. I'm just making places up, wherever it might be.
There's not many states in this country I haven't been in at one time or another. And I have to say, we do live in some of the prettiest country you will find in the United States of America.
Oh, there's definitely, there's definitely exceptions like Colorado and Wyoming. And there's places I love to meet.
Montana.
Yeah. But all in all, just to have the abundance of the variety we have, because those places are known specifically for certain things, like for their trout or for their mule deer or for their elk or for whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Moose.
Moose, bear, whatever the case might be. But then you got here, you can't hardly name a thing that we don't have a little bit to offer,
Our bear population's growing. We're opening up seasons here shortly.
Exactly.
Our elk population's growing.
Elk are here.
Missouri's going to offer it all here soon. Yeah.
Exactly. Just give it a few years, and it's just growing.
We don't have mule deer here. That's one thing. But,
I'd be pretty excited. I'm super excited about the elk, though.
About the bear, too. I hope I live long enough to see a good bear season here.
Oh, I hope so, too. I definitely hope so. And I've been wondering about that. I think I'm going to ask conservation about that, how the bear population are.
Yeah, Tommy, Tom? I think we kind of – sorry to jump in here, but I think you kind of left yourself out on what your biggest smallmouth was. And I didn't want you to skip out on us and not tell us about your 12-inchers.
Yeah. Well, I've actually been fortunate. I'm a big fish hunter, bounder, whatever you call it, bounty. You know, I've got a bounty. There's a bounty out for 20-inchers, I guess, and that's to catch them, release them, take a picture.
CPR, yep.
Right. There you go. There you go, CPR.
That's exactly what I do.
So, I've been fortunate to catch several of them, but my biggest is actually 23 1/4.
Wow.
Is my
biggest size smallmouth.
And it come out of the Gasconade.
Now let's talk about the age of that fish.
Oh man,
that's a 16-plus-year-old fish.
Oh boy, that fish
at
that
size.
You know what? That fish was caught. And this is how I tell you what. I don't remember a lot. I'm terrible with names, but I guarantee I can remember everything about fishing. That fish was caught December 17, 2007, at like 4:31 p.m., give or take a minute or two. You know what I mean? Literally, I know exactly where that fish was caught. I know exactly where it was caught, exactly the hole. I mean, it was a winter hole, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that fish was so big at the time. Well, it's still big. At the time when I caught it, though, I thought I never knew in a million years. I never would have dreamt in a million years that a smallmouth was capable of getting to this size. Mm-hmm. There's no way. The most impressive thing on that fish, I promise you, was its tail fin. Its tail fin, it was like 7 inches from tip to tip.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And just to give you a little quick story about that fish, because that is the fish of a lifetime for me.
Yes.
I said it then. I said, I'll probably never catch a smallmouth this big again. And I've caught a lot. I got a video that's all over the internet, multiple videos of catching 4-pounders, catching 20 1/2 inches, big fish. But it didn't compare to this one. This one was 5-plus and 23 1/4 inches. And I just got back from Lake Fork, Texas. Back then, all I had was a digital camera. We didn't have the fancy iPhones like we have now. And I told my buddy, I said, there's no way I'm letting this fish go without getting a picture of it. I can't. This is a fish of a lifetime. I mean, I'm as big as I am at catch and release. I've got to get a picture. This is literally my lifetime achievement of smallmouth fishing right here.
And that tail fin gives it a lot of power, too.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, it's incredible. So all I had was a 5-gallon bucket and some frog togs, which I'm sure you guys all know, and the pants. So I took the fish, put some river water in it, carefully placed it in there, took the frog tog back, pulled the drawstring as tight as I could around the lip around the 5 gallon bucket, and then tied the legs in a knot, double knot, and drove as fast as I could straight to my brother's house. And I ran out. He's in the garage this time. It's, you know, it's wintertime, so it's like 6 o'clock in the evening, 6:30. And I was like, James, you got to come check out this smallmouth. I was like, yeah, just don't worry, you got to see it. I need a picture of it so I can hurry and get it back down to the river. He's like, well, how big is it? I said, it's 5 pounds. He goes, there's no way. There's no such thing. I said, just come look. You got to see it. And then when I pulled out of the bucket, his eyes got as big as golf balls.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, my gosh, can the kids get pictures with it? I'm like, yeah, we got to hurry. And so we got all kinds of pictures with it. And at the time, I had a big tank that I always – that's how I learned a lot about smallmouth habits. I would catch a nice smallmouth, 14, 15-incher, and I would take it home, and I would raise it. I'd feed it and watch how it nosed down and how it approached and attacked its bait and whatnot. Anyway, so I knew better. I knew you couldn't just throw it in that warm water. I know. I've learned. And, you know, so I kept in that cold water and left it inside the house to kind of just slowly adjust the temperature. Had it aerated, highly aerated. I went back to work the next day where I happened to work for Tracker, for Bass Pro at the time. And I told my boss, man, I caught the fish of a lifetime last night. So anyway, he said, boy, I bet they like to have, long story short, Bass Pro ends up calling me, we got to have this fish. So I said, I got to let this fish go. There's no way I can let this fish die. She said, oh, we don't want it to die either. We want it to go into our live exhibit. And I thought, man, that is pretty cool. I'm young, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I really like to get a mount of this thing, but there's no way I can die. And we'll tell you what, we will give you a free replica mount and this. What that was like, okay, all right. It'd be kind of cool to say I got a fish in Bass Pro's tank. Yeah. So I did, and I knew that fish's life was pretty much towards the end of it. And what better way to give that fish the end of its last year or two than to let it be spoiled in Bass Pro's live exhibit.
So yeah.
I've regretted doing that for several times because I'm thinking, man, I could have gave somebody else opportunity to catch that fish, you know, in the wild. But then again, I could also gave a gigger an opportunity to gig that thing illegally. Yeah. And
But now, how many people have seen that fish? Yeah.
Exactly.
That they can get that with proper conservation.
Right, with proper conservation, there's a lot that happened. And I just see how much I wasted of our time there talking about my story. Oh, boy. But no, that's I love wintertime smallmouth. And that's, you know, it was such a fitting story talking about my biggest smallmouth because the topic of this segment was wintertime smallmouth fishing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's when I've caught my biggest smallmouth. And that's the truth, folks. I'm not kidding. If you go out there and you find that big school smallmouth, you throw some big baits at them, figure them out. If you can tough out that cold, you will catch the biggest fish of your life. One of my very best friends, Aaron Click, I fished with him on the Merrimack. I'm sure you know who he is. He's good at what he does. He knows that stretch that he fishes, and we catch some giants. Matter of fact, I've caught my biggest personal best Merrimack River smallmouth there with him, and it was almost 21 inches. It was well over 4 pounds. I mean, it was a giant.
I'm ready for February freeze-out again.
Me too. Me too. Well, guys, I'm sorry to do this, but we literally are out of time. We're out of time, and Wild at Heart is heard every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10. The show is produced in the studios of ESPN at 107.3 in Raleigh and engineered by none other than John Francis. We'd like to thank our guests today, Mike Unruh and Damon Spurgeon, especially for staying on for the whole show for us. And don't forget, you can always listen to a podcast of this show. Just go to our website at ESPN1073.com. Click Programming and Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench.
And I'm Jerry Cook.
Thanks for joining us.